Okay, can we start with a song?
Yes.
Thank you.
Conte, can I ask you to tell us about what you were singing, what the song was about?
Yes. I must tell you just a little bit. My English no to correct very well, but that make talk difficult to me. But I go help you, it will help me if I talk to you.
Is this a story of real people, or is this...
This story, the people, but not a long story, not a long time. This story, not a long time. My father time. This story come out of that time, to my father time. The man who played this song and my father, same age.
So your father made the song and you learned it from your father?
Yes.
Mark, let me ask you to tell us about how you all met. Everyone who's sitting in this room now, to tell us how you all got to Gambia and met with Bayan Dimbo Conte.
Well, I met them through my wife's hard studies at Bryn Mawr, where she earned a scholarship that took us to Africa for a half of a year, and the half of a year turned into a full year. Susan studied anthropology and was awarded a scholarship so that she could go to any place in Commonwealth Africa and do really whatever she wanted. And the choice was that we would learn the language and that we would learn the music. And so we were advised by an ethnomusicologist named King, Dr. Anthony King, from the School of Oriental and African Studies in London. He told us that we should go to Bayan Conte in Gambia. This man, King, had traveled in many of the West African countries and told us that of all the Kora men that he met, Bayan Conte knew more songs, played better, and was a perfect gentleman, and would be a wonderful man to live with. So that's how we got there.
By when people come to study with you, mm-hmm. what do you want to know about them before you let them study with you?
For learning Kora, Tommy?
Yes. Can anybody do it, or do you have to like them and trust them first?
Yes. If anyone come to me for I teach you, I go talk with you for my pay. Then you pay me, I teach you.
Susan, I'm going to ask you to describe the Kora instrument, since you are probably very used to describing the structure of it, and it will help everybody visualize what
okay,
we're hearing.
I'll try. It's kind of hard to describe, I guess you'll admit, if you look at it. It's basically a harp, although it's classed by ethnomusicologists as a harp lute because it's a harp because it's plucked and there's no fingerboard, but it's a lute because it has a bridge. It's more of a harp than a lute, but since it has a bridge, it's also called a lute. But the sound box is a very large gourd. It's half actually of a very large gourd, so it's a big bowl shaped sound box, which has a cowhide stretched over it. Then on the back of the calabash there is a sound hole extending up through the edge of the calabash is a neck, which it holds 21 strings. The strings are in two arrays on either side of a bridge which extends out from the face of the sound box, which, as I mentioned, is a cowhide face, which is stretched over the calabash. And the musician faces the instrument as he plays and holds on to two hand grips, which are sort of parallel to the neck on either side of it. And these hand grips kind of serve as braces underneath the cowhide. They also extend across the what would be the open mouth of the calabash, and they are under the hide. But as I say, about 6 inches of these hand grips extend upward and the musician holds them as he's playing. That probably is very confusing to anybody listening. I don't know, Mark. Maybe you can add on to that and clarify a little bit.
Well, Pete Seeger says that it looks like an enormous banjo that instead of having a hoop or a ring, to hold the hide has a hemisphere to hold the hide. That's another way to visualize it.
And I should add that it's a very beautiful instrument. It has a kind of a circle of rivets around it with rivet-like structures creating really pretty patterns on it, and it's very pretty and very grand to see. The kora is an instrument that, from what I understand, is passed on through families. Bai, you learned it from your father, and you taught it to your son Dembo, who is with us as well. Can you tell us how your father taught it to you? I imagine it's very different than if I would pay a teacher to teach me piano.
The time I was learning to my father, a day to my father, a day to work, my father in work, every work he has, I make that. He go teach me. That time, a day to little boy, I know he will have money for pay him. Then I go to him farm for work day. Every work he have, he go show me, I do that. Then he teach me. The time I get word, myself take Cora a able play. He saw me in pay. Then I go, find money, come give him.
So you had to pay your father to teach you?
Yes.
So you have to very much want to learn to play before he will teach you?
Uh-huh.
Dembo, how did your father teach you Cora?
yes. My father, at the time of I born, my age is to go in 5 years, I start to learn the Cora. But that time, I cannot get the money for pay my father. Well, I'm going to the work to my father, his work. I'm going to the farmers for my father in farmers. Everything I do it to my father. The time of my father give me my own Cora, he told me his pay. Then I go find money to pay my father all correct.
So you very much wanted to learn how to play?
Yes.
What would happen if you didn't want to learn to play? Does that ever happen in families where a son does not want to carry on the tradition of the music?
Me, my family also want to carry on with the music.
Oliver, did you learn Cora at all when you were working on the film? Did you try it at all?
I tried it, but I think it's such a complicated instrument that you can't really sit down and pick out a tune. It's not like a ukulele, for instance, and I noticed that Mark was giving Pete Seeger's description as a banjo. It's much more difficult to play than a banjo because of the 21 strings. I suppose what impressed me in Brikama, which is a town that Bai and Dembo Kante live in, is the fact that people look up to kora players. They're not just kora players. They're also marabu. And a marabu is a holy man, a counselor, a griot, an oral historian. So I think what impressed me was the whole social system in which the kora functions in a very important way. But I tried a couple of times, and the little children in the village would run up to me and look at me and ask me to play, but I picked out a couple of tunes, a couple of rhythms, really, probably.
Could you play another song for us?
Yes. Thank you.
This is one of those few times when I can sincerely say I wish we were on television, just so everyone could see you as well as hear you, because you are as beautiful to watch as you are to listen to. If you're just joining us, I have a number of people with me in the studio. My guests are Bai Kante and his son Dembo Kante. They are both visiting America from the Gambia. They are performing around the country, and they are staying at the home of Mark and Susan Pivar, who studied with them for a while in the Gambia. With Mark and Susan are also Oliver Franklin, who with Mark and Susan did a movie about Bai Kante, which we'll be talking about a little later. The movie, the song that you just played, was that also a song about members of the family, or a song that carries with it some of the history or some of the tradition?
Yes.
Of the people?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this song. Of course, we play the different kinds song here. Two. The first one is called Kumbusora. This Kumbusora is a very rich man in Gambia, Republic of Gambia. This Kumbusora, if the man go to him to in Kiriot, big jaliba. That Jaliba and my father, his father, is one age, the same age. And his tight friend is called Wandifeng Jobate. He's go to the Kumbusora. Kumbusora kill him cow. Then
he made this song for him.
He make this song for Kumbusora.
So most of the songs that you sing are about people.
Yes.
There are songs about people who really lived, and through the songs you tell the younger people about what has happened before.
Yes, younger people and people who need know that in life. If you have song before you die, this song will stay. People play. Another song, you date your life. Then I made you song. I sing in that song, everyone know you. I like everyone know you. I make song for you. Then I sing in that song, everyone go hear that song. You go ask me, you go hear your name. That kind.
Mark, can you give us a sense of what concerts were like, what kinds of different circumstances people gather together and listen to Bai Kante and to Dembo Kante perform?
There were times when it was like a dinner party of a wealthy patron, a merchant or a politician, would invite the Kantes to come to their home, and the Kantes would sit down and share some food and play and eat some more, and people would share eating, and the guests would be there also with the patron, and they would spend many hours together just in a small group, sitting and joking and listening to stories and talking about other occasions when they were together. But then there were other times when I recall one big chief called us, Sulejobate, called us to a town, Sibanor. And in Sibanor we stayed for 4, 5, maybe 6 days. It was a long time, and each night there'd be playing. Sometimes we would go outside and sit on the porch, the concrete porch, and the village people would come and sit on mats all around us, out underneath the stars, and listen to the songs and the stories. And other times we would be inside in the room where Sulejobate held his court sessions. And the Kantes would sing the songs and tell the stories that go with the songs, because what we're hearing now is a very abbreviated version for our ears, because we don't know their language. And I can assure you that if we were Mandinka, you wouldn't be able to keep them to playing a short song like this. They would take a song like Kumbusora, and they would tell you the complete story. They would tell you about the man's life, his parents, his village, his work, who he married, his children, what he did, all the things about the man and all of his accomplishments. So it's quite a social event. You'll get an entire town of 200-300 people come and sit down. The patron, the chief, will give the musicians money. People will come and give clothing. If they hear their family name being sung, they'll be very happy. They'll come and give something to the musician as gratitude and thanks. And it's a wonderful occasion because all the age groups come together. You'll see the old grandmothers will be there and the young mothers with babies on their backs, and the old men, the young men, the small boys, and rich people and poor people all come to hear because it's the story of the people and of the country. They all share this. It holds the country together.
Oliver, what was it like for you when you were at these concerts? Was it? Did you feel very much a part of it? Did the people welcome you there? Yeah. Or is it a very private thing, these concerts, where everyone's history and stories are being shared together?
Well, I think my greatest advantage is that I could pass for a Mandinka. I'm from Virginia. My grandparents are from Virginia, and apparently the people came from that area in Africa. So a lot of people would look to me as an African-American and try to figure out where I came from. I think the most important thing that impressed me about the Kora concerts, I remember one particular incident. We were playing in Dakar when we first arrived, and we had the great Senegalese filmmaker Ousmane Sembène with us. He had feted us for an evening, and Mark was doing some recordings. We were staying with a friend, with some of Biconte's friends in Dakar, and they were having a concert. And we came back, three black Americans, after a wonderful meal, and we entered the concert, which was in a gentleman's living room, and we sat down, and Bai and Dembo were playing. And I closed my eyes and started listening to the music, and I opened up my eyes, I looked around the room, and the only people moving were the black Americans. We were moving from left to right. And then I looked at the intense concentration of all of the people in the room listening to the music. And it occurred to me that this is a mental music. It's a music that you listen to with the heart, but most important, it's a music that you listen to with the head. And I think that was my first real understanding that it wasn't that I was moving back and forth like I am now whenever they play. I didn't stop moving, let me tell you, whenever they play. But that it really was a social history, a cultural history, and it was a very mental thing. That impressed me. From what I knew about Africa, I expected to find, from what we learn about Africa in this country, we think of music is totally emotional. It is emotional. But I was very impressed with how mental. And then a gentleman got up in tears and walked out. He was crying because apparently Bai and Dembo were singing a song about someone that he knew. I don't quite understand the circumstances of it, but it was an emotional thing. That impressed me. I was so impressed I could barely get to sleep that night.
Do you know that in America, for instance, most of the songs that are sung are about love songs, or about love. Most of the songs will be a song that a man sings about a woman who he wants to make love to, or a woman sings about a man who she wants to make love to, or a man sings about a woman who's just left him, or a woman sings about a man who just left him. I mean, they're not these histories and stories about people.
Yes. Me myself go do that. My country self, he go do that. That kind. Every country go do that kind. Maybe. My country go do that kind. Me, I go play song for women. I like you. Then I hope you safe like me. I go play song for you happy you like me.
Are there, what kinds of music are played on the radio in the Gambia? You've played on the radio.
Yes.
What else is played on the radio? What other kinds of music?
Oh,
is it mostly choral music?
Choral music and drama and everything. Different music. Like here. Different music. Drama and small banjo and this.
It's the susa. The one-string violin.
Yes. In Mandinka named Susa, like a violin. Go play like a violin. And dancing group, go to that way for make dancing and singing. and different music.
I know that you would probably make connections between the kora and blues, or maybe jazz. Maybe you'd want to make some of those connections for us now as you hear it.
Well, Taj Mahal is the one who really opened up my ears to the connections between the kora and the blues. Susan wrote an article in Sing Out magazine a couple of years ago, and Taj's wife saw it in a record store in San Francisco, brought it home and said, "Taj, isn't this by Conte, who you played with in a festival a couple years ago?" And it was. He called up and he talked to Susan for about an hour. Then I called him when I got home, and he talked for about another hour, telling name one song after another that he named from the blues tradition, because, as you know, Taj Mahal is deep into the blues. And he was just rattling off song after song after song. And he kept pointing out, he said, "Well, when I heard this kora song, I understood why the backbeat came in here. And I understood when I heard this part of the melody, I knew why the verse changed in this other song." And he's just full of connections. I'm not musicologist enough to be able to name the names. But the connections are there when you listen, especially to the changing, the contrapuntal rhythms that occur, as well as to the harmonies that you have. You've got very strong harmonies that happen with the kora. And the blues, I think, also has the form. You've got a 16-bar form that's pretty common and standard with the blues. You'll find this with many kora arrangements. And also, kora songs have verses that can be sung, or phrases that can occur in many different songs. Just as with blues, you have what they call floating lines or floating verses in the blues. You have those similarities and many others.
Dembo, have you heard blues and jazz? Are you familiar with those forms of music?
Well, in Gambia.
In Gambia, or during your visit to the United States, have you heard blues or heard jazz?
No, maybe I play with jazz in Gambia. I play with jazz in Gambia.
You do?
Yes.
So there are people who do both, like yourself. Yes. You play the traditional music. And
yes, we play the traditional music and the another kind of music, the plenty kind of music.
Do you use the kora when you're playing jazz?
Yes, that time I used the kora.
Oliver, did you get a sense that there were many people in the Gambia who were aware of the music that was kind of born in America through African music?
Absolutely. Our first night in the Gambia, you know, we're taking this boat across the beautiful Gambia River. It's one of the deepest rivers inland. And we got to our hotel, and of course every room has a balcony, and the first thing I heard was "Babu dee 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 dee." And I looked out the window, and there were these kids out there doing the boogie. And, of course, they were listening to, reggae music and Cuban music. The minute they find out I'm an American, they always want to hear James Brown, or they'll mention some. I think what has happened is because our only form of creative expression open to us during times of our captivity here in this country was music, and we exercised such creativity in that sphere, such a power, that we exported it. When you realize that there are more John Coltrane records sold in Tokyo, Japan, than in all of the United States, it gives you an idea of the power of the music. I think there's a definite connection. If you look at Nigerian music, there's a gentleman there named Fela. Excuse me. A gentleman named Fela who has taken a kind of reggae beat and put it together with traditional Nigerian music. And music is really the common communicative register of black people all over the world. I'm glad we've chose something as such a universal form, because anyone can become involved in it. But we met with musicians from the Fangbundi band, which plays in banjul, and they were constantly telling us to bring records. And the next time I go over there, I'm going to bring the latest, WDAS Top 10 records, albums, because people are really interested in it. Mm-hmm. I also think that we need to begin to listen more seriously to this kind of music, to kora music. People who listen to it can hear definite connections, particularly musicians, and they're always interested in learning new things. And the patterns here in this music is complex. And it has a certain sense of classicism to it when you listen to it. So I've been pleased and amazed, really. I mean, I always thought deep down in my heart that when people heard the music, they love it. But I have not heard one person that did not like choral music and Bai and Dembo playing it.
Bai, do you ever worry that perhaps if popular American music comes strongly to the Gambia, that the young people might prefer to play soul music or jazz rather than the traditional music? Has that ever worried you, or do you think that that would never happen?
Yes, one time I look American Miss Jazz to Gambia. He make concert. Many people were like. Many people there go there to Bajul. I look there one time. Me go there. That invite me for go there. For go look these people, American people.
Mm-hmm. What did you think?
He make jazz, dancing and jazz,
mm-hmm.
and banjo and guitar. Big team, all like, everyone all like this music to Gambia.
But they also like the traditional music too, these people? Or do you think?
Yes, they also like traditional dance for these people.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, could we hear another song?
Yes.
Just joining us. My guests are two people who I'm very honored to have visiting us from Africa, Elhaj Bai Kante and his son Dembo Kante. And the instruments that they are both playing is the kora, which, if you're just joining us, it's an African instrument, a very grand instrument, whose base is a large gourd, which is hollowed out. And there's what would you call the fretboard, a kind of round-type fretboard with leather straps that hold on all the 21 strings. It's a very grand and elegant, beautiful instrument. The songs that you sing, as we've been talking about, carry the history of your people. It's a lot to remember. It's not like remembering, a short 3-minute song with a few stanzas. We are hearing, as Mark pointed out before, very condensed versions of the songs that you sing, and you must know many, many, many songs.
Yes.
How is there a process by which you remember all of this, or do you just remember it?
Every song, the my father time and that in father time, the first people in song will get history. That history dear to me. But song were I made myself get history for myself. Then I made for you. I go get you history for I put them to my song. Then I talk to people.
Dumbo, was it easy for you to be able to remember all the things that your father passed on to you that were passed on to him by his father?
Yes. Of course, I learned to my father. Then I teach to my father. My father told me what his father taught him. My father told me what his grandfather taught him. And still I remember that.
I should mention that there are two other guests with us as well. Mark Pivar, who first went to the Gambia in the early 70s to study there with Biakante, and Susan Pivar went with him. Now, she's kind of with us and kind of not with us right now. She's in the next room, calming their son Joshua, who is having a little trouble settling down right now. I hope that she'll be joining us again in a few minutes. Oliver Franklin is also with us, and he, along with Susan and Mark, have visited the Gambia and have made a film there about Biakante and his music. Biakante, you are a holy man. You are a Muslim holy man, in addition to being a very fine musician. Do those two things go together?
Yes, music and prayer, not one, not the same. Prayer is there to Al-Quran. Music is there to people, not for right. My family, no right music. You go write story. My music, anyone I teach you, here. If you hear, you like, you write, but me no have for write. Then I go teach you, I show you, tell you able play. Like me. But history, people in history, you go write that. If you know write, you don't know that. But you go write that for reading that, like a book. You're able to talk to people.
There are many Muslims now in America. Mm-hmm. For instance, black people who grew up in America, mm-hmm. who have changed their faith to Muslim. Have you met many people like this, and do you have any thoughts about the way Muslim is now being practiced in the United States?
I meet one Muslim, so I forget this town in name, but not American people. Turkey people, in name Sufi. I meet them.
You've met Sufis?
Yes, I meet them.
But you haven't met many Muslims.
I look not a Muslim. You go show me Muslim, but I don't know him.
Someone told you they were Muslim.
Yes, yes. Somebody tell me, me not Muslim, this not Muslim, but I don't understand for that. I never talk with him for Muslim business. But these people, I go to these people, I spend one night to in place. Then I know these people not Muslim. Before that, I don't know anyone.
So you have to spend time with someone to get a sense of what Muslim means to them.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about your trips to both places. I'm wondering, Oliver, if there are things that you brought back with you from the Gambia. I know you brought back a lot of ideas and probably a lot of things in your heart. Are there physical things you brought back with you, like objects that you just like wanted from the Gambia, wanted to either help you remember the country or because they were just so interesting in and of themselves?
Well, of course, since besides Baikonte being an excellent kora musician, he's also has a very wide reputation as a kora maker. So I had my mind set. When I returned, I was going to have a kora. So the first thing I brought back was a kora. But then again, in the Gambia, there's so many different things. One thing that Mark had already briefed me on before we went was the fact that they have such tremendous kinds of cloth there. And we spent a lot of time, well, we didn't really spend a lot of time, we'd like to have spent several days, really, searching the different bazaars, the different markets for the special kind of cloth, batik cloth that is made in the Gambia. The one thing we would like to have brought back a lot of, we couldn't get in, kola nuts.
Why can't you get them
in? And I don't know. I hear conflicting reports. You know, the kola nut is very important in West Africa. It's one of the ingredients of Coca-Cola, and it's a stimulant. You can eat it. It suppresses your appetite. It gives you a buzz, quote unquote, in a very mild way. And I've heard conflicting reports that you can import them, and then again, you can't import them. Mark has been looking into finding out how we can bring kola nuts, because most people who go to Africa, West Africa in particular, you know, whether they're Euro-Americans or Afro-Americans, the first thing that they encounter in terms of a cultural way is the breaking of the kola nut and giving it to a friend. It's a sign of friendship. So we wanted to bring some of those back. We brought back a lot of ideas, a lot of memories. I think one thing that impresses you when you go to a place which has an extended family is a tremendous amount of security you feel. Of course, we took, you know, normal precautions with our equipment. You would do it anywhere. But I didn't feel any sense of physical danger at all. I went out in the town and got lost, you know, just wandering around because you didn't have any fear of going into a bad neighborhood, or you didn't have any fear of someone taking your wallet. That was totally gone. And one other point which you brought up, which interests me, is the idea of memory. And you have to understand, in these cultures, which are oral cultures, you see 8- and 9-year-old kids who start out learning the Quran. You might remember. So, I mean, memory is something that they just do. I think when you're in a literate, a print society like we are, you don't have to train that part of your brain, because all you do is read it in a book. You just have to learn how to read. But these people can quote. They can talk for days and not make a mistake. And it's important because whenever you tell a story, there's someone else there who will know if that story is right or not. And it's your personal reputation that's at stake. And that's why when Alex Haley, people question Alex Haley, you know, are you sure this man knew what he was talking about? Because in our culture, this is alien to us that someone would come. And incidentally, if you saw the Roots 2 television show, you remember there were two koras there. When the griot, the man that told Alex Haley the story, he wouldn't speak unless he had two koras. So it's a very real thing. And when you're living in a culture where people don't read, memory is the way that things are kept. And you start out at a very early age learning the Quran, from verse 1 to the last verse.
Mark, would you like to add a few things about some of the things you feel you took back from you from the Gambia, either in the way of physical objects or of memories or things in the heart?
I had a lot of feelings. I still have them when you asked me. So searching within, Oliver really has touched on most of the things that came to mind first for me. And now that I'm thinking of it a little more, there's a wonderful lack of machines, a wonderful lack of noise. I can remember opening the door one night to go out, looking up and seeing the stars so clean and so close, without any smog or dirt or anything in between me and the stars, and without any glow on the horizon from a distant city, and then noticing that I could hear somebody shuffling through the sandy streets blocks away, and then noticing that very quietly further away, and it was over a mile away, was a sort of a p-p-p-p-p sound from a generator at a standby generator station. There's a profound quiet and silence. The sounds in Gambia are the sounds of living things. And I think that this has a lot to do, to me, my memory of the environment is that it's a place that I remember for its life, more than for the objects that are there, although there are so many striking and interesting and curious objects. It's the life and the presence that it manifests through sound, through odors, also that people there use everything. We're just getting into recycling here. I never saw a junkyard in Gambia. They didn't have to have Lady Bird Johnson, bless her soul, come and put up fences to hide the junkyards, because in Gambia, if a car is broken or has an accident, little by little the pieces are taken and used and put in other cars until there's nothing left except for the skeleton, and then a blacksmith takes that and he makes tools out of it. Now, this is something we're just learning to do in this country again.
Biconte, I'd like to ask you if the last time you were in America, if you wanted to take anything with you back to the Gambia.
Yes.
What were some of those things?
Many, many, many things. Get different thing and not see him to Gambia. You go see another thing to Gambia. If you come America here, you not see that one. If you do, you go to Gambia, you go look some here. You know, see, I'm to Gambia. If you come here, you like to get that for your home.
What kinds of things?
Many different kind thing. Maybe transport, maybe radio, maybe bed, and different thing. Love thing.
Dembo, are there things that you think you would want to take back with you from America to the Gambia?
Do I want to go back in Gambia?
Joan, no. Do you want to bring any objects that you could carry with
yes,
you
yes.
back there?
Yes.
What kinds of things?
Then I need a tape on radio, but Gambia has tape on radio. The good one in Gambia. But some radio here, you can't see it in Gambia. But some radio in Gambia, you can't see it in America.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Of course, it's a very different things.
What are your impressions so far of America? You've played here, you've been performing, you've met a lot of people in a short time.
In America here?
Yeah.
With this trip.
Yeah. Well, you've made two trips now.
No, this is my first trip.
This is your first trip.
But my father...
This is Biconte's second
trip. Biconte is a fourth trip.
Fourth trip.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. But me, this is my first trip. America is a very nice place. It's a very fine place. It's a very nice looking place. But Gambia, too, is a very nice place. It's a very fine place. Then I like Gambia. I love Gambia.
Okay.